The last word on Today FM with Matt Cooper.
A lot of the problems in recent weeks with outdoor events taking place has been the lack of toilets. Helen Vaughan, psychotherapist with Maynooth Counselling, and Aoife Barry, assistant news editor with the journal.ie, are with us to talk about the week trending. And one of the things that has come up is the idea of what's called the Pequal, a new women's urinal. Tell us all about this, Helen, please.
This is amazing. And these things seem to come out every few years where they're like, women, we have it sorted so that you can pee, more of you at the same time at events or pubs or whatever. But it's basically a kind of a round thing, a round room, for want of a better word.
Sorry, I don't know if she could describe it. You know the pie in A Trivial Pursuit?
Yeah, it's like the little pieces of pie.
Six pieces of the pie. The diagram I've seen for this female urinal looks like that.
Looks like that. And on each piece of the pie is a woman with a urinal, which is more like, I don't know if you've ever been to Asia where you have the toilets that you just squat over. You kind of stand and squat and do your business. So it's like that rather than something you sit on. And you don't close the door. There's kind of a partition between each one, but I believe you can see each other, but only up to, say, your neck or whatever. But it basically means that in a smallish space, you can have six women going to the toilet as opposed to one or two. Because some new figures that I hadn't seen before said that there's an average of 10 male urinals for every female toilet, which means...
And this is the space issue, isn't it?
Yeah, but it means that women spend 34 times longer waiting to go to the loo than men, which is madness when you go to a gig or something. You know, you're out and you don't want to be standing there waiting for the toilet for ages. And this just seems
to ask this question? I'm taking my life into my hand by asking it, but could it be that when women get into the toilets that they also spend time doing their makeup and various other things, which creates longer queues?
Sometimes, but that's not in the toilet cubicle, that's out by the by the mirror.
But it still creates issues with space.
I think
moving
it's a bit of a myth.
Quickly.
I think that's a bit of a myth. It does happen sometimes, but not most of the time. Most of the time you just want in and out, back to your pint or your gig or whatever it is. And I like the sound of this. I'd definitely give it a go.
Aoife Barry, assistant news editor at the journal.ie. What do you make of this figure that is 34 times longer? I suppose if you look at the queues at any major event, or even recent times, I've been noticing in Stephen's Green at the public toilets that were put at the corner, the queues for women seem to be way longer than the queues for men.
Yeah, it's almost a cliche, really. Go to any festival, go to any event, anywhere where you've got men and women there and people are queuing up for the toilets, the queue will always be longer at the women's. And I mean, there is like a cultural thing as well where like men find it easier to pee on the streets, which is obviously not a nice thing. Hate seeing it myself, but it, like, there is that idea that it's like convenient, men can just pee anywhere. Women, there is more taboo obviously about that sort of behavior around women. Ideally people wouldn't have to urinate in the streets at all. I think something like this is a really good idea. I mean, it's a flat pack design, it's kind of easy to put together. It shows obviously there is a huge need for it. People would love to be going in and out of the toilets quicker. I'm sure it could probably be gender neutral as well, so you wouldn't have to have that kind of male or female binary with the two, which makes it great for the whole community. Personally, I would find it a bit weird, I think, sitting there not being used to being sharing toilets with people in the sort of way that this expects you to. But at the same time, like, we do get used to stuff, and I'm sure it wouldn't be the only public toilets available. So if people weren't too happy, they could perhaps choose another option. But it's always good to see people come up with unique ideas. I mean, that's what you need, people thinking outside the box.
Listener says, I hope they're not like the squat holes in Italy. Splash, don't wear satin shoes. We had Mark Paul from the Irish Times were telling us as well, Aoife, recently about piss wars, as he called them. These are sort of little male urinal stations, yeah, which can be out in the street, that they're used in Manchester for big football matches, that they're quite common in Paris as well. Could you see those catching on in Dublin and the rest of Ireland?
They might well do. And in certain countries, I think it's in the Netherlands, they actually have them under the ground, like they're stored under the ground and then they can press a button and they come up on busy evenings, you know. So there's that idea there, I think, in other countries or other cities where they know that people need to urinate on a night out if there is not a lot of access to toilets. So they create this public access to toilets and they have these clever ways of doing it. So, I mean, sure, look, why not have them there? I suppose the question is whether or not it becomes a bit of an eyesore, or whether people, you know, treat them well or not, or whether it becomes something people are uncomfortable with. But I think a discussion around this sort of stuff is really badly needed, because we've seen the huge call for toilets now at the moment in the cities like Dublin City at the moment. Like, Dublin City Council has had to answer that massive call because it's just not good enough, really, for us not to have enough public toilets
but
around.
Actually, Aoife, I was talking to a restaurateur today who made the point that while those porta cabins or portaloos are very, very welcome, and that there could have been a lot more of them brought in earlier, particularly as they weren't being used for festivals and events and the rest of it, They've now come in at a time when actually the pubs and restaurants which are facilitating outdoor dining are also making the toilets available to customers, so the demand for the portaloos has actually dropped.
Yeah, well,
too late.
Yeah, so I was just going to say as well, I mean, there was a demand there beforehand, you know, so the idea that they're now only responding months later, that kind of probably says a lot about the thinking behind it.
Okay, and something we discussed on yesterday's programme, Helen, but we got a massive response to it, and I think it is worth discussing as well, when it comes to the idea of outdoor drinking and dining, the issue of smoking, and if it is okay, acceptable to smoke outside, that's where people used to be moved out of pubs and restaurants to have their cigarette, should they be allowed to smoke while they're having their meals, or is that unfair to the non-smokers who are sitting at the same tables with them or adjacent tables?
I think they shouldn't be smoking. And it's funny that this has come up because I was in Clifton for the last few days and I was sitting outside a pub under an umbrella. It was raining, of course, because it was in the west and we were kind of squeezed into the under the umbrella trying not to get wet. And I was looking, there was signs saying no smoking. And I thought, that's funny. If we're out here now and we have to be outdoors for our meals and that's fine, is it OK if someone next to me pops a fag and starts smoking? And I don't think I would be OK with it, A, because I'm eating, but also because I've two young kids with me, and nobody did, so it didn't come up, so I sort of relieved. But I did think, I don't think it's appropriate to be serving food and also then having your smoking section in the one area, given that real estate is so hard to find at the minute in terms of getting enough space to sit and have your meal and not feel on top of the next person and whatever. It wouldn't appeal to me to have someone smoking next to me. I wouldn't like it. And I was quite happy to hear someone call for it not to be allowed.
Yeah, but Aoife, Barry, a lot of smokers are feeling this is further discrimination against them for consuming what is, after all, a legally available purchase.
Yeah, and around, I think that one of the latest surveys showed around 23% of thereabouts of adults in Ireland smoke, which hadn't changed kind of in the last number of years or thereabouts, although I think nearly half of all smokers do want to actually quit. So I mean, yeah, there was, I suppose there are questions, some people who do smoke, the idea that they're like, well, I mean, it's legal, I'm not doing anything wrong. The problem with smoking though is that you secondhand smoke, you know, that if you're not a smoker and someone next to you is smoking, then you're still affected by the smoke that they you know, by the cigarette smoke that's coming out. I remember back about 4 or 5 years ago, I did an interview with a couple of restaurants for the journal.ie who were cracking down on it themselves, so they weren't waiting for the government to do something about it. They had decided that they were cracking down on smoking outside in their terraces, and that they said at the time they hadn't had any major complaints. You know, I think you'd probably be slow to get a complaint from someone who doesn't smoke. You will get the complaints from people who do smoke, and obviously they're the ones who are being affected most by these sort of things coming through. I mean, personally, I would welcome it, but I'm not a smoker, so that's why, you know, I think it is, you know, it's for the health idea. It's good for me, I think, not to be breathing in secondhand smoke, but I can see why others might not necessarily feel that they can kind of do what they want to do when they're outside eating their meal there on the streets.
A lot of comments coming in from listeners to 0874100102. This one says, as someone with Crohn's disease, COVID has highlighted the lack of public toilets when many hotels and etc. were closed. Another one says, I'm working in an outdoor environment. We don't allow smoking in our eating area. They have to leave the table and go elsewhere. This listener from Cork. And going back to our first item, Sharon says, never mind makeup. It's a technical issue, really. Women can't just whip it out and pee in a second. We have to half undress before even doing the business. And I would presume we all squat anyway, says Sharon. That's to you, Helen, I think. And another listener says, one of those public urinals underground, they actually have one of those in Belfast as well. Okay, other issues we want to talk about in the week trending. I suppose the good news, Helen, is that we now have 11 Irish hospitals with zero COVID patients. We have over 1 million people who've had both doses of their COVID-19 vaccine.
Yeah, it's amazing to hear the hospitals finally being free of COVID cases, having spent so many, I was going to say years, but obviously a year and a bit, you know, counting the case numbers and how many are in hospital, how many are in ICU. And they're slowly falling since, I don't know when, was it maybe March? But I think it was announced yesterday that St James's had no COVID cases. And then quickly all these other hospitals came out then today. There's now 11 altogether who've no COVID cases. So that's like Nace, Cork's Mercy Hospital, Tullamore, Sligo, Galway, Kilkenny, Waterford, and also the three children's hospitals, Temple Street, Crumlin and Talla, all have no COVID cases at all anymore, which, I don't know, it's got to be really good news. I did hear a doctor on the radio yesterday saying that for him it was kind of more of a relief than a cause for celebration, that they're just glad that hopefully the worst of this is over, and that on a, you know, in terms of the health service, hopefully they've seen the worst of the surges so far. But yeah, it seems like good news all round.
Of course, Aoife, it means that there will be other illnesses that have to be dealt with. Do we have to worry about an outbreak of monkeypox?
It doesn't look like so far. Matt Hancock announced yesterday, I think during a press conference, that there are a couple of cases of monkeypox, two infections, I believe, in Wales.
This is in Britain. This is not an Irish issue.
Yeah, sorry, in case people don't know who Matt Hancock is, he's the British Health Secretary. I should have said that at the top. He was being grilled by MPs in the UK about the handling of the pandemic, which obviously Dominic Cummings wasn't too happy about. But Matt Hancock was trying to point out that as Health Secretary over there in the UK, he's dealing with all sorts of things. Obviously, a huge population there, and a lot of people, despite COVID stuff, will be travelling as well around for different reasons. He said, "I'm currently dealing with the monkeypox outbreak and cases of drug-resistant TB." But he said that is absolutely standard. So he's not really getting anybody to panic. Apparently, the first case was caught. So the person caught the virus abroad. They passed it on to someone in their household. So it wasn't like out in the community or anything. And both the people are in a hospital in England. Now, if you're kind of a little bit squeamish, don't Google monkeypox, because you will get some really gross photographs. I know I was definitely turned off my lunch while looking at this earlier, but it is a mild illness. You get these kind of pustules in your skin. Some people do get serious symptoms, so people are cared for in the hospital. And the scarily enough, the illness starts with things like high temperature and headache and muscle aches. So it could, start off like any other, illness that's out there, but it doesn't look like Ireland is at risk at the moment.
Tell us, Aoife, about the latest proposals for that very controversial whitewater rafting facility that Dublin City Council wanted to put in a George's Dock in the Financial Services District.
Yeah, what's interesting about this is that this kind of like discussion has been going on for a very long time. Well, it feels like a very long time over the last year or so, that there was going to be a proposal for a whitewater rafting facility at George's Dock. But now there have been fresh calls for Dublin City Council to actually scrap these plans, which have been very controversial, and instead build a public outdoor swimming facility. So, I mean, that I think makes a lot of sense to a lot of people. I know people probably have heard of the Lidos over in the UK, like the London Fields Lido, which is basically a heated pool. That's not an uncommon thing to see over there in London. And people can go there, go for a swim in the heated water no matter what time of year it is. And it's very much a community-based thing. So the whitewater rafting facility as proposed is supposed to be a tourist attraction, used by sports clubs, used by Dublin Fire Brigade and other emergency services as a bit of a training resource. The cost of it was supposed to be initially about 12 million. It's grown to 25 million euro. And there's been, a lot of opposition to it so far, because I think some people don't really see maybe the fact that people around the community might want to use a whitewater rafting facility, because it is a bit more of an extreme sport than going swimming in a lot of people's mind. This petition calling for that plan for the whitewater rafting facility to be scrapped and replaced by an outdoor swimming facility has got about 3,000 or so signatures so far. Not surprised to see there's a lot of people signing up to that. I mean, it will be interesting to see whether or not the council actually does change its mind based on a petition. Potentially unlikely, but I do think it's still an actually very good idea to replace the whitewater with the idea of a swimming pool. It feels a lot more accessible to people, really.
Helen Vaughan, you're a very keen swimmer. What type of facilities do you think would it be worthwhile installing?
I had heard, though, that the Whitewater Rafting Centre had a swimming pool as part of it, as part of the process.
Well, it would have wanted to, for the amount it was going to cost.
But doesn't that make more sense? As Aoife says, it's so much more accessible in terms of people who swim versus people who do whitewater rafting, which I've done a bit of canoeing, but I'm no expert. And it's incredibly difficult, because all you want to do is not capsize and drown. But I think a pool would make so much sense. You see them outdoors in the UK and they're gorgeous. Although it does say they're heated. I think they get down to quite chilly temperatures in the winter. But I would love that. I think Dublin doesn't have enough publicly accessible swimming pools. There's a few private ones, not many public ones. And this, if it was 25 or 50 metres, I think would be stunning. Tourists would use it. Locals would use it. Swimmers would use it. Friends would use it. I don't know. I think it's a great idea. And the whitewater rafting, I do quite like the idea. I think it would be amazing. A lot of people don't. And the cost is obviously, doubled. So to me, a swimming pool makes huge sense.
Maybe there's going to have to be more things put into the city centre to attract people back in the post-COVID environment, particularly if more people are going to be working from home in the future.
Well, and don't you think it'd be an amazing thing to go and watch whitewater rafting or the fire brigade training or stuff like that, or go rafting yourself? Like, you can do those rafts where there's about eight of you in it and there's an instructor in there. So they're doing the work. They know how to keep you not dry,
but safe.
Yeah, but
I think wasn't the problem that the prices were going to be so prohibitive, it would only be for high paying tourists who'd be able to afford it, probably.
Yeah, whereas this, if it was a Lido, could be 5 or 10 euro per person for a swim. And that makes a lot of sense. I feel like you'd get more people through the door or through the gate. And it just seems more accessible for more people, which to me anyway makes sense.
Now, Aoife Barry, we will have Nick Ferrari with us a little bit later talking about the G7 conference been hosted by Britain this weekend. But tell us about Boris Johnson's mode of transport to go to Cornwall for the discussion on climate change.
Yeah, so Boris Johnson, who, as we all know, is based in the UK, did fly from London to Cornwall by private jet for a summit that would include talks on climate change. And of course, you know, a lot of people are mocking him for that. That's not unexpected. The G7 meeting is happening, and obviously on the agenda there is climate change. And it does, I mean, it's so easy to laugh at this, but at the same time, it highlights the fact that at these big, huge events, these G7 meetings, you've got, you know, these massively important and powerful people talking about this very huge topic, which affects everybody across the world, climate change. And yet most of them have probably flown there or are living the kind of lifestyles that actually maybe aren't the most environmentally friendly in many ways, just because of the sheer kind of life that they have. It would take about 5 hours, 20 minutes, apparently, to drive from Downing Street to Carbis Bay down in Cornwall, where the G7 are meeting. Or Boris could have taken a train, and then he would have had a 4 mile drive then to Carbis Bay, I think, from the direct line train there. So, you know, it's one of those things that just highlights a little bit of hypocrisy that tends to go on when you've got leaders from seven nations gathering in little Cornwall and beautiful Cornwall, while outside the kind of rest of the world is pretty much burning under the climate change issues.
Helen Vaughan, Naomi Wolf was once a guest on this programme, but I can't imagine circumstances in which we'd invite her back again. This is the latest person who has been, I suppose, deplatformed. Our Twitter account has been suspended because of her anti-vax sentiments. She has some strange modern ideas, doesn't Naomi Wolf?
She does, and I think this is good to see that people who keep kind of putting out these messages that are wrong actually do get taken off Twitter eventually, or, you know, to see that there is consequences if you're going to constantly spout stuff that's not true. And I'd love to see more people, you know, at the mercy of this. But some of the stuff she's saying are mad, and I don't know whether to repeat them because then you're giving her more air or more oxygen. But, you know, she said something like the vaccines are a software platform that can receive uploads, and you're like, that's bananas. But, you know, you don't know who would know to believe her or who would know to disbelieve her or question her. She also made claims that said vaccinated people's urine and faeces should be separated from general sewage supplies until tests are done on that, on the impact on unvaccinated people then via drinking water. I don't know where she gets the stuff, but she's been removed from Twitter, which has got to be good news for herself and Donald Trump, both, you know, high and dry in terms of people being able to hear their views. I'm sure they all have blogs and things like that if people really want to find out that kind of crack. But, you know, I just think this is good news all round.
Of course, last year, didn't she, well, Aoife, she had a remarkable tweet about Belfast and the absence of 5G in Belfast and how it made things as peaceful there as in the 1970s.
A bit of a major misstep there. I mean, she might have been referring to her own childhood in the 70s, but it certainly read as if she's talking about Northern Ireland in the 70s.
Yeah, I read the quote. It said, "It was amazing to go to Belfast, which does not yet have 5G, and feel the earth, sky, air, human experience, feel the way it did in the 1970s. Calm, still, peaceful, restful, natural."
Yeah, not, I mean, you know, it's actually quite sad in a way seeing Naomi Wolf go the direction she's gone, because at one time she was a major feminist like hero. You know, she wrote The Beauty Myth, although I think if you do go back and read The Beauty Myth, there are bits with that you can see maybe how she ended up where she did. But, you know, she was someone who was really important in the feminist space and has gradually, and you know, become someone who people would be very wary of, you know, what she says on Twitter about coronavirus, etc. So it's great that I think that Twitter are actually making a stand against people who are spreading misinformation, because like you were just detailing there, the amount of stuff that she's saying, it is from these corners, these spaces on the internet where people are sharing a lot of misinformation. But she's a very prominent person followed by a lot of people, so when she tweets it, her words carry a huge amount of weight and have a very high possibility of being spread throughout the world. So that's why you see Twitter taking a really big stand here. So it is kind of sad in a way, I think, really seeing how things have ended up for Naomi.
Okay. Very quickly, Helen Vaughan, to finish. After 5 o'clock, we're going to be discussing sports events with crowds, concerts, whatever. But hopefully we won't get to the situation like they had at the French Open, where Novak Djokovic's quarterfinal had to be paused to kick out the fans.
It seems bizarre, doesn't it? So once the curfew came up at 11 p.m, the public had to go home, but the match had to start, players come off and let everybody file out of the stadium. Which I guess, you know, I know why the rule is there and everything, but once they're all in the stadium, it makes no sense, surely, to have them all crowd out together. You know, would you not just wait and let the match finish? But, you know, Novak Djokovic did say it didn't put him off. He was happy. He felt like a break in play and he got one, although his opponent didn't agree and said it did affect his game and he then went on to lose. It, to me, it seems kind of madness, no?
It does a bit. Helen Vaughan, psychotherapist and Manu's counselling. Aoife Barry, assistant news editor at thejournal.ie. Thank you both for being with us here on The Last Word of Today FM.